ever beyond, on Wolf Spirit Radio and everbeyond.info and No Borders Radio. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Welcome to Ever Beyond. It's now. It's now 11 p.m. UK time, GMT, BST, and we are on Wolf Spirit Radio, and it is the 22nd of September 2013. It's the autumn, the fall equinox. We are... I've just been speaking with for the last 2 hours with Katie Galanti, who's agreed to stay on for a little bit more, because there's so much coming in from the Gold Council, and all the subjects are coming up in the chat room, and it's a very lively conversation there. I thank you, everybody who actually put stuff into the chat room. The participation is the thing that does it for me, for internet radio. This is why I love it so much, is the fact that you can speak with the people who are listening, and they can ask questions and clarifications, and actually what's happened, and what happens is the people start conversations of their own. There's parallel conversations going on. All very, very interesting. So, welcome back, Katie Galanti. And we are talking about various things to do with how the energies are. We've been discussing La La Land and how people get caught up in the bliss, as it was exemplified in the TV series V a few years ago. It's an entirely a reptilian construct. So, where were we? We were just talking about stuff, weren't we?
We were talking about crystals, right?
Yes, we were. That's right.
But we were also talking about where do we go from here in terms of changing this planet. Okay? And changing this planet, and we had come to the conclusion that we changed the planet by not participating in the current setup, and also by seeding new structures built on consciousness. And by consciousness, I mean true human consciousness rather than reptilianly mind-controlled consciousness. Because the planet that we have right now is a planet that has been built on structures that are founded on a dark, fourth-dimensional, fifth-dimensional dark polarity consciousness of dog-eat-dog. Pretty much. Okay? And you can see this even in TV shows like Sweet Genius or whatever, which are, you know, or Big Brother or Survivor or whatever, where the idea is you compete against your brother to get to the top. That's how it was. Survival of the fittest. You compete against the other person so that you can be the one that climbs to the top of the pile, to the top of the pyramid. And, you know, not such a big deal when you're competing over a dessert, but that's the model. And the model sometimes is even darker and much more ruthless than that. And we need to move away from that. We need to move away from that to a model of cooperation where the basis is about win-win, where people can thrive, all people, not just a bunch that make it to the top, and at the same time, not an enabling, you know, an enabling culture that where, like, everybody has to do their piece, but where people are encouraged to become all of who they can be and contribute what they can to the pie. And in a way, our micro world of Facebook, that, you know, Facebook is a structure, obviously, that has been created by the powers that be, in the sense that it's a platform that belongs to them, and we all know that the reason for which they built it is basically to have electronic data files on everybody and who they are and how they operate and who their friends are and who their family are and what stuff they like, and, you know, it's a big grand database, right? But as very often happens, the light forces that can use those structures is like, okay, thank you for the structure, and then they can use it and they can turn it into something different. And what we have turned it into is a big networked family of people that all share their piece, and all together we make our own pie. But every person has got their own flavor, and they've got their own way, and they've got their own stuff that they can contribute, but everybody is coming together, and somehow it all blends, right? And we like each other's stuff, and we move forward. In some ways, that's a good model, right? It's a good model for moving forward.
Yeah.
Because the basis of that model is we are a group. We are a group consciousness, we're a positive group consciousness, and together we're going to figure this out. Okay? And as long as we can keep that group consciousness, human-based group consciousness, going, there's a lot of resourcefulness, because a lot of us are very resourceful, and there's a lot of energy, and there's a lot of power in that. And if there wasn't any power in it, we would not have Rachel Maddow going on, about conspiracy theorists and how ridiculous they are every 2 minutes on her show. Right? Because we are becoming a very strong, cohesive group of people that, that if we stay strong and cohesive, we can move a lot of energy. If we allow for the infiltrators to kind of break us up, And if we stay out of, out of ego now that the people are becoming more popular, we can continue doing that and continue to build.
So let's talk about that, that vision that you had earlier, and break it down a little bit, in terms of, okay, so you know the people had, they were in a little conurbation, a group of dwellings that had a central power, a power source that was not centralized. It was localized. It had a local power source. Yeah. Therefore, there's no grid, no power lines, no pylons. They generate their own power. What were the things that were they using wood? Let's see how much of the detail we can get there. But how were people keeping the houses warm? Was it a kind of crystal technology, a heating technology?
About this windmill, I don't know if it was a windmill or what it was, but it was something about this structure. And it was only one. You know, in England and here in Southern California, we have the fields of windmills. You've seen
them,
right? Yeah,
we have them here as well. Wind farms, yeah.
Wind farms. And they're horrible. It's like, they look like, it's like endless stretches of windmills, and they kind of look kind of evil, and they flap around, and they make a lot of noise, and people that live next to that stuff say that it's impossible, because there's always this hum of these windmills that are constantly spinning. So, although that looks like a good idea in principle, it's extremely ugly to look at. It's not particularly, you know, you have to have so many of those things going to actually generate the kind of juice that you want that it makes it really impractical. And, it's so obviously that's not the solution, right?
Yeah, no, there's some kind of, for instance, having a windmill to kind of kickstart another generator. A magnetic generator is probably likely. That they got the windmill is a kind of backup that creates a battery thing, but there are other things around.
But also, it could be a windmill that operates with Tesla technology. Now, I am not an expert in Tesla technology, but one of the things that I do know about the energy that Tesla was harnessing, he was harnessing free energy, lots of it, that floats around in the ionosphere. Okay, the ionosphere being one of the layers of the Earth atmosphere in which the ions run around all by themselves, charged particles just run around, right? And what he was doing, he had devised some way of, like, some form of antenna that could plug into that and take that energy down, and that is an unlimited, continuous resource, right? That's actually a lot of energy, and it's constant, and if you can plug into that thing, it never ends. Do you know what I mean?
That's right. And Tesla had a car which had a little aerial. Yeah, it was like about 2 or 3 meters long.
Right.
Which tuned in, it was basically like a radio receiver. You know, if you take, you know, radio waves are energy, very, very weak energy by the time you get them. But this ionospheric energy is incredibly abundant. And if you can just get the right frequency of it, because it does run out of frequency, if you can get the right frequency of it, you can have enough energy that, well, you know, he did it, he actually did it, he had a car, it ran around all by itself without any batteries, without any motor, just this aerial. So it's all really possible, and that this is very much more likely the kind of energy source that we're talking about. The windmill may actually have some kind of photovoltaic ion capture. It's possible to take a photovoltaic cell and actually capture wind with it. This is something I want to experiment with. I've got a few cells that are like just a naked cell, and I want to try putting them into the wind to see if they actually pick up ions. In fact, what we often fantasize about, because it rains so much here in Scotland, instead of having a solar power, you have a rain-powered generator.
And also, there's things like you can capture the energy that comes from tides. You know, there's a lot of ways in which one can harness energy on this planet that is in the moment, energy that it could be used in the moment. And the only reason for which we do not have these things is because we're ruled by people that make money off of those other structures, right? And even the oil thing, there's now theories out there that even oil is a renewable resource because the Earth does keep on churning it out somehow. It's not, even the oil story is not as
everything seems. everything we were told in school is a lie.
It's a lie.
And what we're constantly told as well. But yes, abiotic oil, it's called, if you look it up.
Right.
Abiotic oil. It shows that oil is not a, it's not a result of plants or anything like that. It's a mineral production process.
It's literally the blood and the veins of planet Earth.
Yes.
That's what the oil is. The oil is the same as our Venus system for the planet Earth. Okay, and it flows, and there's pockets of it everywhere, and it regenerates, and just like our blood regenerates, so does the oil, right? The main issue with the oil, apart from the fact that they give us this story that there's so little of it and that they're running out of it and all the rest of it, because if they can keep things in the scarcity box, then they can also manipulate you and make you pay a lot of money for something that is a scarce commodity. But the main issue with oil is not so much on a practical level. Let's say that we take the Illuminati out of the picture. Oil is still not a good way to do energy because it's dirty energy and it pollutes and it creates, and it's a oil, all oil byproducts apart from being dirtying for the air, and because they you get energy through burning it. But all oil byproducts are toxic. They are xenoestrogens, so they're hormonal disruptors for the human beings, right? There's something else wrong with it as well. I'm just trying to think about it now.
Of course, it's benzenes and things like that, and PCBs.
Cancer. Mm-hmm. All of that kind of stuff. So basically, it's not human friendly. Is it kind of the same as the nuclear energy? Yeah, it's great. Nuclear energy is fine, and you can make tons of it from very little. But if it goes wrong, the price is too high, you know? Like, the price of having one mistake with the nuclear energy can wipe out the whole planet. The price is too high for that kind of energy, okay? Because mistakes happen. And even if they're not on purpose, like Fukushima, because I believe that one was done on purpose, if it happened at all, because there's some people that say it didn't even happen, and it's all a hoax, like all the other hoaxes. But, you know, just in general, nuclear energy has too much of, like, the risk when things go wrong with the nuclear are too high. And there's no need for it, because there's other ways in which we can do energy that don't have all of those kind of side effects. So what we need to move into is other sources of energies with no side effects. But as we know, we've already discovered those other sources of energy with no side effects. We already did that. And we did that through Tesla. I mean, Tesla came in, he already solved that problem. The problem that we have is that it's not solving the problem. We're very good at solving the problem. I think that there's like 200, God knows how many, patents for cars that don't run on oil. And every single time something gets discovered of that kind, General Motors buys the patent and then it buries it. Do you know what I mean?
And then the guy dies mysteriously from what we know, what is generally known in the trade as the Boston brake system.
That's right. You know, and people die, people go to prison. Look at earlier this year, I was doing some research on Reich, because I was doing some work for school. I'm in a PhD program doing a PhD in psychology with the expressive art therapy specialization. So I was doing a class on bioenergetics. That is basically how to heal emotions and the psychology of the being through the body, right? Because a lot of the blockages get stored within the body, the trauma gets stored within the body, right? And so there's a whole branch of alternative psychology that is called bioenergetics, where they literally work with the body to unblock trauma, right? And they came to that through, first of all, as an offshoot of the work that was being done by Reich, and who was a student of Freud, right? And who, like many students of Freud, had to go his own way, because Freud didn't really like having that much competition, because he didn't do his own psychoanalysis properly.
Freud had stuff, lots of stuff.
I think he was the real deal, but he was not a pure being. I mean, and come on, he was the first person, he discovered therapy, but he didn't have any himself, so.
Exactly. Well, who could have done the therapy for him? That's the thing. But the interesting thing about Freud, well, my feeling about Freud is that he got the right analysis, but that his cure was not exactly right, because he recommended cocaine for neurosis.
Really?
That was his cure for it.
Well, and there's a little conspiracy around Freud, by the way, because that Freud was the first. If you read Alice Miller's books, and Alice Miller is an Austrian psychoanalyst, or used to be a psychoanalyst, and in fact she was, I think, the president of Austrian psychoanalysts, and if we know that psychoanalysis actually started in Austria, in Vienna, with Freud, that's a fairly big position to have. And at some point she went, that's it, I can no longer participate in this, I'm walking away from the psychoanalysis world, and she became an art therapist. She was one of the first proper art therapists, and she wrote a whole bunch of books. on toxic psychology and toxic pedagogy, that is basically the raising of children, how you raise children. I'm sorry, my throat tickles.
Sorry, I thought you said the raping of children, and the raising of children. I'm just getting too much used to this kind of talk. It's you know what I'm saying. Anyway, so Alice Miller. Yeah, I remember because when was it? How old was I? I think it was in the 1980s. I read Alice Miller's. It was originally called, I think, The Drama of Being a Child. And yes. It was then changed to The Trauma of Being a Child, which is essentially the same sort of thing from one side or the other.
Yeah. It is, but she also wrote another two books. One is called Thou Shall Not Be Aware, all right? And then she, I can't remember the title of the other one, but basically those two books are like dynamite explosions in the therapy world. I read them at the time when they had very first come out, so at the end of the 80s. And actually, the Alice Miller's books were my first trigger for remembering my own trauma. And if I hadn't read those books, I probably wouldn't have started any of this uncovering of any kind. But it was so triggering, that material, for me, that within a couple of weeks of that, I was in therapy with somebody with the book in hand saying, please tell me you're a therapist of the good kind, because I need to talk to you. And I started my therapy journey at that time, which was, I was lucky. I found good people to work with, so it was all good. But basically, what she was saying in those books is that that Freud actually had stumbled through his practice and through his work on hysteria, you know, this hysterical paralysis and all of that kind of stuff, that was part of what he was working on with hypnosis with people, that he had stumbled on incest as a massive, all-pervasive thing, because he was working with very rich people, because they were the only ones that could afford to actually go and have this, you know, very advanced, futuristic therapy. And so he was working with people that were kind of the well-to-do Vienna. And these women that had all of these symptoms in the body, hysterical paralysis and neuroses and all of this kind of stuff. And what he was uncovering was all of these stories of incest. And he initially came up with almost like a first theory of incest trauma, but then he got frightened about what that actually meant. This is what Alice Miller says, that he got frightened about the implications of the fact that so many of these people, these women, had been incested when they were little by their parents or whatever, and so he backed off, and then he came up with the Oedipus complex, and do you know what I mean, like, and the effect that the child fantasizes about the parent of the opposite sex and makes up all of these stories about these desires that it has, that are born from the desire that the child has for the opposite parent and wanted to replace it. That is a whole bunch of bullshit. Now, because we know what we know, and Alice Miller doesn't go deep enough into the rabbit hole, but because we know what we know of Vienna, of all places, because that is actually where Adolf Hitler came out from.
Exactly. I mean, see, now when, you know, now you relate that. You know, I remember reading about Freud and about these people, and you're talking about incest, and now we're realizing that, you know, as far as, you know, what we've learned from Svali is that incest was the abuse du jour of the elites all through history.
It is. And so here he is, and he's opened up this can of worms. He's like, all of these people that have trauma, okay, let me go in and try to fix it. Oh, incest memories. And this person that is well-to-do in the elite Vienna, and they're telling me that they've been, you know, that they've had this incest experience. And there are two theories here. Either what Alice Miller says, that is, that he got freaked out and he backed away from it and made an alternative theory, because he couldn't quite wrap his head around it, okay? Or somebody said, dude, if you write again about this incest business, you can have a whole bunch of cocaine all in one go. And that will be the best and the last trip you'll ever have. You know what I mean? Or you can come up with this bullshit Oedipus story that one of our magicians has concocted for you and write a nice book about it, and we'll make sure that you'll be very, very famous. And by the way, all of those students that you have, if any of them disagree with you, just throw them out of the door and tell them that they're full of shit. You know what I mean?
I do. And so, you know, we're looking at this, and, you know, given our knowledge about how we're seeing the operation, the MO, the modus operandi of the Dark Lodge, the Illuminati, the Cabal, whatever you want to call them, they're all the same, you know, them, that what we see is that it's the same thing that they've always done. Now, we can now look at what we've been taught about what is in history, you know, you know, the history of psychology is just exactly what you were just talking about, except that his statistical sample was heavily weighted towards the incestuous, because he was studying the sample of the population that practices incest almost on a daily basis, it seems. You know, we look up to, well, some people look up to the royals and the elites, but we are now starting to realize that they're completely victimized from the minute they're born, almost. And they're just as puppets as we think we are.
Yeah, and even before they're born, because if you read Fritz Springmeier's work, right?
Oh, it's How to Create an Undetectable Mind Control Slave, that one.
Yeah, and the continue. He's got two books. There's that one, and then more stuff on how to create a whatnot. Like. The second episode, right? And actually, the second book is even more interesting than the first one, because the first one is more kind of the stuff that we know, right? And the second one, he goes deeper into it, and there's actually a lot of the real technology that they use to do all of this kind of stuff. And he has a very interesting appendix in there. All of this stuff, by the way, you can find it for free at the bibliothecapleiades.com. Do you know that website?
I love that place. Biblioteca Pleiades, it's a Spanish website that just happens to have an English translation in it. And their stuff, you can get all the stuff about Alex Collier's original works. That's where all his works have been stored. Everybody's. It's like archive.org for the alternative world, and it's brilliant.
It's the conspiracy library. And whoever runs that, who knows who they are, because I once tried to figure it out. They're pretty anonymous. But they keep that website ticking, and it's got everything that is out there and available to be read for free is on there. They've done a great job. The other website that has a lot of really interesting stuff is educateyourself.org, right? That has a lot of interesting free stuff on there, too. But you can find the books, those two books, Mind Control ones, Fritz Springmeier. By the way, Fritz Springmeier, I think he's a hero, that dude. And he's also somebody that doesn't do very well financially. He's also somebody that struggles to stay fed and clothed, right, throughout all of this journey, despite the fact that he is an amazing scholar, and in some ways he's responsible for breaking open the really deep, deep levels of the rabbit hole as far as the whole mind control thing goes. If there was no Fritz Springmeier, there would be no David Icke about certain topics. He's done all the research about all the bloodlines and written them all down. So I would suggest go to the website and read the book for free. But if you have money and you know, buy the books, because that is one of the ways in which you support the people that are doing the work, because if you want another book by this dude, then he has to eat. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's important that as a community that we start thinking like a community and that we support each other as much as we can, so that the people that are doing the work do manage to keep ticking, keep surviving, and keep contributing, because we need them, right? And so I'm just putting that in there, because I think it's great that there's free stuff out there, but I also think it's important to contribute to the people that created it at the same time, right?
Absolutely. There's some incredible workers out there. Jordan Maxwell, this guy, Fritz Springmeier. He's really rare groove, Springmeier. He's like the conspiracy theorist's conspiracy theorist. He's really deep in there.
He was framed a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
They framed him. They framed him over something, and he ended up in jail for 8 years.
Yeah, well...
You know, just after he published his book about the bloodlines, all of a sudden, they framed him. And, you know, the details, you can go to his website and find out what those are. But, what this guy did was that when he was actually inside, he spent all of that time inside teaching inmates how to get their GEDs. So he actually even became like a healing cog even inside of the system, right?
That's you see, this is the thing. People like him and Robert Menard, who's a Canadian comedian and sovereign dude, they don't want to put him in prison anymore because he keeps educating people. It's funny. Right.
It's like, okay, now we're going to educate some people that have a little testosterone behind them, right?
That's right.
They have enough testosterone to get themselves into trouble, so now let's educate them.
So this is, I tell you, the chat room is boiling, and it's not in a really good way. All right, so there's so much going on here. It's lovely to speak to everybody. First of all, I just want to I did mention Alex Collier, and of course you can get everything about Alex Collier at alexcollier.org. But I did say that the Bigelow Techloplades was the original archive. So James has managed to gather everything he can that he's found on the web, all the new stuff and everything relevant at alexcollier.org, and any donations that you give actually don't go anywhere near James at all. They go straight into Alex Collier's PayPal account. So he's another guy you can support. People love him, and he's given some good information over the years. So
general, I think we need to support our own. Do you know what I mean? If we're going to create a community, if we're going to create change, we need to start thinking as a community, and we need to support our own. Right. It's one thing to be just information junkies, and it's another thing to be world changers. Okay. If we have to start seeing each other as a community that is out there together, linking together to create change in this world, not just about reading about stuff and bitching and moaning about what doesn't work. Do you know what I mean? We have to start being proactive. We have to start seeing ourselves as proactive beings that can create real change. And one of the assets that we have and that we need to continue to build on is to see each other as a community that works as a community.
Yes, so back to communities. Yeah. Nice segue, Casey. Nice segue. Back to communities. And I'm very into the idea of these... new communities. Now, it does sound a little bit like it's a bit kind of post-apocalyptic, these new communities. Can you tell us a little bit about the buildings that the people were living in? Can you remember anything like that?
That's right. Houses. They actually, this is going to sound weird, but they looked almost like igloos. Like they were round, they were domey. Okay.
Excellent. That's exactly in my mind. Yeah, go on.
Okay. instead of looking like boxes with the triangle on top, right, they looked more dome-like. And each family had their own dome, you know? And the... But they felt all networked together. It was not like I'm in my house and you're in your house and I watch TV and I'm shutting you out. It felt like the community was networked together somehow.
Were they connected underground?
No. Not in that way. Telepathically. Like, almost consciousness-wise.
All right. Okay.
Okay. It felt like a little bit, for example, I live in one of those communities here, even if this is not a community in theory, but I live in a place that is very conscious, and a lot of people here are very conscious. We all know each other. For example, I know pretty much every single one of my neighbors, and it's more than pass me the salt. We actually care about each other. My neighbor had a problem this morning. She dropped into my house. I'm short on funds. A neighbor drops me some food. Do you know what I mean? Like it's how it goes. And we are aware of each other. If somebody has a problem, we're there. And part of the reason for which this is so is I'm awake. The guy that lives next to me is an ex black ops physicist. He's awake. Do you know what I mean? The woman, the woman at the front is somebody that had a full-blown Kundalini experience at some point. She's awake. Do you know what I mean? So we live as awake people. We're aware of each other. We help each other out, and that is kind of like the people that live behind me. They grow their own food in containers. So they, when they have too much kale, they bring me kale because they've got an overflow of kale and they can't eat it all in one night. Do you know what I mean? So it's the kind of connected that I'm talking about. It's smaller communities, but where people are awake enough that they're aware of each other and they cooperate to create whatever it is that is going on. Okay, so that was in the vision, that was the energy. The energy was a vision, energy of cooperation and of awareness of all of the pieces required to make the village tick. And I also got a feeling that it's not that there was just one village on the planet. There were many of these and somehow they were all connected, but they were not connected in the way in which we're connected now. Because now we're connected in a very anonymous way through a lot of bureaucracy and political and infrastructure type stuff, right? Like we're connected through grids and electrical systems and power lines and political things and, do you know what I mean?
Yes, our borders aren't natural borders, they're political borders, which are back to the world that I was talking about before, the Truman world, the construct.
And instead, this felt more like conscious people networked and consciously networking, right? So consciously connected to the other pod or whatever. So it's almost as if you have a pod up there in Scotland, you know, and our friend Roger has another pod in... we're looking at Roger Silver's...
down in Gloucestershire now or something, isn't he?
He's in Gloucestershire, but, so let's say he has a pod over there. And let's say I have my pod over here, you know, and some other person has a pod in Seattle, do you know what I mean, or whatever. We're all consciously networked with one another. Again, we're already doing this in some ways, right? But we're doing this through social networking. We're doing it through chat rooms or whatever. But somehow we're networking with each other. There is a connection between what I'm doing here in Southern California, what you're doing in Scotland, and what other people are doing in other parts of the world. And somehow we're connected with each other. Maybe, who knows, maybe it can be through some kind of web that this happens, right?
It's interesting that James in the chat room is saying, like the mycelium, like mushrooms.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of nourish. Hey, I'm getting some kind of medium that can transmit nourishment as well as, say, electricity or water or something like that. That's a weird concept.
Yeah.
But that's what mushrooms do, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, the sense that I had, and this is going to go more into the woo-woo zone, was that the world that I was looking at had a much higher frequency, like much higher frequency. And I'm going to put a pin in this because I had an out-of-body experience this summer, last summer, not this one. This summer has been very challenging. Last summer, I had a lot of paranormal stuff going on. This summer has been very here in the trenches of karma, okay? And very intense. But there was a sense that the frequency on the planet was actually really high, that there was a telepathic merging between us as human beings, but also with the nature of the planet itself. Which, if you were to remove all of the EMF on the planet, you know, the electromagnetic frequency and the cell towers and the pylons and all the rest of it, I can tell you now, even without all of the conflict consciousness removed, right, you would feel different. Because here in San Diego, I think it was 2 years ago, we had a blackout, right? And it was a blackout that went on for how long? I can't remember. It was like an afternoon until the next day. And so there was no electricity whatsoever, none. Okay, from, let's say, 3 o'clock in the afternoon until the morning of the next day. And it was very interesting. I think it was an experiment of the powers that be. I think they did it on purpose. They wanted to see what happened. Do you know what I mean? Cause it,
oh, yeah.
I mean,
everything, it's nothing happens by accident these days.
Yeah. I think that was literally the powers that be doing a social engineering experiment. Okay, this is a really populated area. If we pull the plug on it, what happens? Do they kill each other? Do they help each other? What do they do? Do they loot? Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I just had the feeling that we were part of an experiment. I felt observed.
Probably Grand Theft Auto is a way of influencing that behavior as well, yeah.
So anyway, so what happened here was, first of all, incredible stillness. That's how it felt. It was like all of this static that you don't realize that is going through you and irritating your nervous system every single minute of every single day, all of a sudden was gone. And so there was this feeling of real peace. It was like, this is kind of nice, actually. And then what happened here was, my physicist neighbor came over and he was like, I have a generator, because he's a prepper, right? So it's like, okay, I have my generator. So if you guys need any cool water or you need anything, I've got you covered. You know, I've also got the reserves of food. He was all happy he could just experiment with all his prepping and see how it went.
Fantastic.
And then, but the biggest issue was that we couldn't buy anything because the ATM machines were out of order, and so were you couldn't get anything with a card. So unless you had actually stacked away some cash, right, you couldn't buy anything. And so a lot of the stores closed because they couldn't operate. And so the one store that was open, that stayed open into the evening, was the pizza thing, because they had a wooden oven.
Oh, nice.
Because they didn't need the electricity to operate. And so the whole of the neighborhood was lined out in front of the Espresso Pizza Hut.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Everybody in the whole neighborhood had pizza for dinner.
Well, here's the thing, you know, we're talking about, what to do in the case of a loss of the mains grid electricity. Now, a lot of us have battery-powered equipment, and all we really need is a way of recharging that battery-powered equipment. Now, the more ingenious among us and the more mechanically able, you know, you could rig up a bicycle to an alternator and generate 12 volts while you're watching TV.
Yeah.
Or you run an MP3 player that uses a lot less electricity than a TV to charge up your battery and use the battery for pumping rather than for the heating, which you use wood, burning wood to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do use appropriate technology for the job. So, you know, I personally am trying to live that life. I'm trying to, I've got a wood burning stove here, and I've got an inverter, and I haven't actually done it yet, but I haven't been up in the attic yet. But the idea is to get a pump that runs on 12 volts that can run off, a battery instead of running off the mains grid. And then my heating is sorted.
Yeah,
and I've got LED lighting, and I've got battery. My laptops can run on batteries, but there are things like the mixing desk and microphone. They won't run on batteries. They need AC. So, but I can still run that off an inverter. But that's a bit of a hassle, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Probably run the radio station. If we didn't, you know, give me a couple of days to sort it out, I could probably run the radio station from here, as long as the phone line was working still and the computers were running on their own generators so that the internet was still running. That would be an interesting thing. Does the internet still work if the regular power is down? That'd be interesting. It's probably dependent on one mains plugged in router somewhere in the exchange.
Well, if the regular power was down, obviously not, but in the vision, there was power, it just wasn't centralized. It was local and generated locally. So I would imagine that if every one of these pods, right, or cells, had their own source of power, then you could still do things like internet, and you could still do... The feeling that I had was not of some place that was beaten down back into the Stone Age. It felt like a very modern. It felt modern, but it felt different. Okay, it was as if it was modern. It was functioning. It was efficient. It was working, but it was different. And it was very high consciousness. There was some kind of telepathic consciousness going around as well. It was very in tune with nature, and it was in some ways kind of advanced, but it was very different from what it is that we have right now, and that the basis of it was much more localized, and it was much more like cells, village cells connected to each other rather than the big complicated, like if you look at our structure now, first of all, there's a lot of people on the planet, so there's a lot of connections, okay? It didn't look as if the planet was as populated, which sounds like not like a good thing, right? Like it sounds like you know, if you think planet with not a lot of people on it, that means a lot of people left, that means a lot of people died, who knows what happened, right? And also, who knows if we're on the same timeline that we were on in 1999, like 14 years have gone by since then, we may be on a different timeline altogether. But the vision did stick with me, and the vision stuck with me because it showed me about the future possibilities, and this is maybe my thing for today. Maybe it's time for us to start brainstorming and thinking. We have so many bright minds among us, right? We're bright enough to see through stuff. We're bright enough to understand all of the connections of everything that has occurred in our past that has brought us to where we are now and to the level of disempowerment that we have on the one hand. But on the other hand, we are also in an ascending, if we choose to be, because we are at a crossroad and at a juncture right now where we can choose to either become, it's like, what are you going to do with the information that you have found? What are we going to do with the information that we have gathered? Are we going to use it to do something with it? Or are we just going to sit with it and say, okay, well, this is what's happened, and we have been taken over by a dark force, and they've always been here, and they have bullied us, and humanity is not free, and all that kind of stuff. Okay, great. We all know that now. Okay. So now what are we going to do with it? Are we going to sit, and are we going to just sit there and say, poor us, and, you know, this really sucks, and go on about the police state and all of the rest of it? Or are we actually going to try to build something alternative that is different and move it to the next level? And I think that if we make the choice to actually, it doesn't even have to be an us versus them. We can just start building a parallel world. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. That has got to be the way that we do it. It's rather than a rebellion.
It is.
It's not like a direct rebellion X against Y. It's X minus Y. You just step away from the problem and build your own solution.
Well, because the one thing that we have to realize, and I think this is a key piece, is they cannot do it without us. They're parasitic. They don't have any energy of their own. They cannot fuel this system without the human beings at the bottom of the pyramid pushing all the stones. They can't do it. Even energetically, they can't do it. Even energetically, these beings are not sustaining. One of the reasons which I clear entities out of people is because these beings, they cannot sustain without plugging into some other being to give them energy. And the reason for which they can't do that is because they are disconnected from source. And the reason for which they're disconnected from source is because they have chosen to step away from natural law. And they have chosen to walk away from what sustains them so that they can gain their own source of power. And their own source of power is a source of power that overcomes and overpowers everything else around them. So the minute in which you decide to go against the natural flow, and you go and you decide that you are going to take from other people instead of generating something, the minute in which you decide that instead of being a powerful being that radiates, you're going to be a being that overpowers, when you do that, you lose your connection to what fuels you. And then, ironically, even if you're after power and you're after your own self-aggrandizement, you actually lose all of your energy because there's nothing that fuels you anymore, and you have to become a parasite to what is around you. And if you look at this even from a psychological point of view, there's a lot of stuff right now on the web in general about narcissism, because it seems, and psychopathy, because it seems that everybody and their mom is like a narcissist and a psychopath these days, right? And think about that. What is that? Why is that so? It's because we're becoming parasitic. It's because it's not just about trauma. It's not just about childhood. It's not that all of a sudden everybody's had such a bad childhood that we've got an epidemic of narcissists out there. It's because we live in a narcissistic society that cuts people off from the source of their nourishment. And the source of their nourishment is a faith in a higher power. And it's a harmony with the natural order of things. And it's about giving and receiving and cooperating with others. And when you cut yourself off from that kind of stuff, and when you're educated to cut yourself off from that stuff, the only way in which you're going to fuel yourself is through taking from other people. And it's through taking from what it is around you. And then, yes, you become a narcissist that is constantly looking for the next fix and the next supply, because you cannot generate your own energy by yourself.
Right. Yes, you are the source of other people's, of the narcissist energy. It's what we call attention whoring as well, isn't it?
It's attention whoring, and me, and, I have to feed me. It's all based in fear, and it's all based in trying to get power instead of generating it, trying to get something. I'm empty. I have to fill myself up. And so, you know, we have a whole generation of people now that are all empty and don't know how to fill themselves up. And they go about it in toxic ways. And why do they go about it in toxic ways? Because the cartoons that they watch as children are narcissistic. Because the celebrities that they look at on the TV are narcissistic. Because the parasites that rule this world are narcissistic. And they are teaching everybody else to become like them, because once they are that way, then they're easily exploited.
Yeah, that's right. It's what Luz always calls modeling. they model this behaviour for us, and there are other models. You know, there are better archetypes for surviving as a human.
And as you know, I used to teach in schools, right?
That's right.
I taught, and I used to like it. And actually, I kind of miss it. It was fun to me. But I used to teach in schools, and I taught for 5 years as part of this in a East End, really hardcore, you know, ghetto kind of school.
Yeah, East End. For those who are not aware, the East End of London is the sort of South Bronx kind of version of South Bronx of New York. It's actually where I come from. There you go.
Gangster land.
Gangster. Yeah, I mean, if anybody's heard of the Cray twins, that's Bethnal Green. That's where I come from. That's my land.
I had gangster kids, you know? Like, I really did. I had some kids that were, like, 12 years old with a brick in their hand and, like, hey, you know, my dad has been in prison about 5 times. What do you want to tell me?
That's right.
you know, but they were also, in their own way, the East End. I actually worked in North London at some point, in Holloway.
Yes.
Like in the Holloway Islington area.
Slightly nicer version of Gangsterland.
Well, actually, no, because it's a mixed. The North London and the King's Cross in Islington area was bombed during the war, and so there are some areas in there that are really highbrow, right? In the middle of that, there's some nightmare estates that have some of the highest rate of crime in London that are extremely violent. And I taught in one of those estates, right? And that was the most violent environment in which I ever worked. And I used to set my watch. I would literally walk into the gate and I would say, okay, now I'm going to count up to three into my head and somebody is going to tell me to F off, right? And literally, that's how it would go. It was like, F you, Miss Galanti. Why are you even coming to school today?
Oh, God.
You know. And they were violent. They were violent as all hell. And they had the police that you had to patrol the playground at lunchtime. We had, one kid that had his jaw completely broken to a pulp because some other kid and his homies came and hit him with a cricket bat in the mouth.
Holy crap. A cricket bat, you do not want to be hit with the mouth. It's bigger than a baseball bat.
It's bigger than a baseball bat. And then I had some white supremacist kid that bit out a piece of a boy's stomach in my classroom during a racial confrontation. So that was really, in some ways, the North London bit was actually even harder. It was harder because the East End kids, at least they had some, they stick together. They've got that kind of Cockney, do you know what I mean?
Sort of Cockney honour, yeah.
Cockney honour, right? So they kind of stick together. There's a slight more, it's less fragmented, right? They have a slight more cohesiveness, at least in, they have a code within themselves. Well, instead, the North Londoners, they're a really fragmented community, very, very violent, very, very bad drugs, very, very bad everything, right? And why did I start talking about my East End kids? I've lost my track now.
We were talking about the... what were we talking about? Because they were talking about being rickrolled. Yeah.
Rickrolled. Narcissism and
narcissism.
Value.
Yeah, brought up into that system. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, narcissism. These kids, a lot of them, they're all... Okay, first of all, they didn't have a strong home life, okay? Because most of them came from single-parent families. There was only one parent, and that parent worked. So these were kids that were alone a lot, and so they were very... When you have a kid that is alone a lot, they watch TV, they get their... And they look at their peers, right? Instead of being parented, they look at the TV and they look at their peers. That's all they do, okay? So they form these kind of like gangs with each other because that, in a way, is how they... survive. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's how they keep themselves in some kind of connectedness with the other humans. And so what were their values? Their values, even the little ones like 11 or 12 years old, their values were, I am going to be a badass rapper, or I am going to make it big playing baseball, or basketball or
football.
You know,
soccer.
And or I'm going to it was like music and sports, right? And I think all kids are a little bit like that, but you could see that the value was very much I need to make it big, I need to make fame, money, status of that kind, right? And a lot of my conversations with these kids at the time, and I used to love these kids, by the way, they were great, they were a lot of fun, right? And and I had a form that I taught for 5 years straight, the same kids. I took them on when they were 11, and I left when they were 16. So I saw them from little tiny things to almost full-blown adults. And a lot of the conversations that I used to have with them were about values. They were about, well, why do you want this? Why do you want to be famous? Like, what is it going to do for you? You know? Well, I just want it. Well, why? Why do you want it? What do you think it's going to bring you? Do you know what I mean? And I was trying to get them to think a little deeper so that they could actually see, you know, think about yourself. Who are you? What is your role? What are you trying to do? Where are you trying to go? You know? And they usually often responded really well to that kind of stuff, by the way. Sorry about this. This is my phone. I'm just going to turn it off.
Meanwhile, on the telephone...
Yeah.
Somebody's calling. Who might that be? What?
Well, that... No, go on, because I turned it off.
Anyway, I'm aware that you have other commitments as well. So
I have a meeting about a project that I'm in at 6:30, and I have to go before I go there. I have to go and get some cathedral beads for my last creation.
As you do.
Roses.
As you do.
As you do. Because the store is closed, the bead store is closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, so if I don't go today, I'm not going to get any beads until Wednesday. That's too late for my necklace.
So it'd be nice. Let's wrap up all of these, okay. all these things, and also, I'd like you to talk about services that you offer. Let's put it that way.
Okay, I'm going to do this time, probably, okay? My work, in terms of services, kind of goes in two directions. It goes into the raised vibration direction, on the one hand, and on the other hand, it goes into remove the trauma direction, right? I do reading-type consultations, but I'm not a straight out psychic. And you know, when you go to a psychic and it's like, okay, what's going to happen to me next week? I don't really work that way. I actually don't know how to do that. It's not that I'm beyond it. It's like, that's not my skill. Okay. My skill is, I can look into people's soul records. I can get a feeling for where people are trying to go into their lives, what it is that they're trying to do and what's holding them back. If the person, part of what I call the evolved souls, which are usually off-planet souls that are here to help, very often what I end up doing is connecting them to their higher selves, to their soul consciousness, to their mission, and what it is that they're supposed to be doing. I teach them how to access their multidimensionality. At the moment, I also have a lot of people that I am coaching in doing things like awakening their light body, and energy work and all of that kind of stuff. So that's the go higher thing. I also do very short health consults, which are, however, not medical consults. They're literally this is the problem that you have, this is the course of action that you need to take in terms of supplements and food and doctors that they need to go to or practitioners that they need to go to. I don't fix them, but I point them where they need to go. And usually those are very short, do you know what I mean? It's like half an hour.
Diagnostics.
Anything. Yeah, it's like you're stuck. This is the pathway to follow. Go follow it, okay? And then in terms of the trauma work, I'm careful about how I'm wording this, because if people are really broken and very, very fragmented, sometimes they actually really need a psychotherapist. Do you know what I mean? Like they really need somebody that is trained in holding people that are very fragmented all in one piece. But what the work that I end up doing with people is literally I help them to explore stuck inner child parts that are, you know, like that are recurring in people's lives. So if there's things like abandonment issues or PTSD type issues that people are dealing with, very often all that it takes sometimes is to go in and talk to the child part that is stuck and that is having problems with it. And if I can connect the person to that child part, they often by themselves can unstick themselves and start to go forward. The problem is a lot of people are completely unaware of the fact that they have stuck inner children that are running the show. And this is true even of people that are very integrated. You don't have to have multiple personality disorder to have wounded inner child parts that are in your way, okay? And then the other stuff is all of the, what I call the trauma track, that is the past life traumas, because there are some people that have been on this planet many times and they've accumulated a lot of trauma through trying to help. And that was my story in my own life, for example. Every time I've come to this planet, they killed me, right? And they didn't kill me in a nice way either.
As if you could kill someone in a nice way. I'm sorry, do excuse me.
But you know, you can just get a bullet and get it over with, right?
They'd like to take their time, Mr. Bond.
They like to take their time. So then, and sometimes for some people, there's a reason for which they take their time, because just like there's mind control, you know, trauma-based mind control, okay, there's also trauma-based death. And trauma-based death is, I will split your soul into so many tiny little pieces that even if you come back the next time in another body, you're going to be so disabled that you're not going to be able to do your work. Okay? And this is a very conscious trick of the dark side. They know what they're doing when they do this kind of thing. So there are some people that have exited the planet through extremely, extremely traumatizing experiences. And when, and I mean extreme traumatizing experiences, like 5 years of torture, right? And torture that is sexual, physical, emotional, breaking down the mind, breaking down the emotional body, breaking down the soul body, breaking down everything, so much so that the DNA codes deactivate, right? And then the person comes back into the next lifetime and their energy system is so messed up that even if they are a good soul and they have a lot of stuff going for them, they try to do whatever they try to do, and they can't do it because the level of trauma is so big that they keep on self-destructing, right? And there's a reason for that, and there's ways to fix that. It's not this is not quick work, but I have worked with several people that have had that kind of stuff going on, and it's a step-by-step thing, but you can piece it back together. Now, wow. And the other thing is, and the other thing is the entity stuff. And I do work with possessions, not exorcist kind, but people that have entities that are plugged into them. There's that ranges from the mild stuff, where literally it takes you 10 minutes to get an entity out of somebody's field, to a case that I had recently where it took 8 months of weekly work to get rid of the setup that this person had. And the main reason for that was because they were such a dark being in other lives that they had made very strong contracts that were very, very hard to break, right? So we had to go back into every single scenario that in which he had made agreements and then break them and so on. And even then, it was hard because when people do that kind of thing, they develop almost addictions to it's almost like a form of codependency. So even if you do the work, sometimes it's, you know, not every problem is fixable. Let's put it that way. Okay.
So Stockholm syndrome. And then the jewelry.
Then I did my jewelry, and that is kind of fun for me. It's a way for me to do something that is useful, but at the same time gives me some creative outlet because I enjoy doing that. Okay. So that's me. And in general, if you want to find me at the moment, probably the best way for you to find me is send me an email, katiegalanti@hotmail.com. Okay. And if you want to go to one of my sites, you will find from there all the other ones.
List them all out, Katie. All very slowly. List them all out. You've got plenty of time, so give people a chance to write them down or type them down and put them in the bookmarks and stuff. Yeah.
All right. So it's reclaimingthelight.blogspot.com. That's the one I'm using at the moment. And when you and I can figure out time, it will become just reclaimingthelight.com. But it's not that yet. Right? And then I have cosmicperspectives.blogspot.com. That is where I write my more spiritual, inspirational stuff. That is more, sometimes it's to inspire myself. Like sometimes I write stuff to inspire me. But I share it instead of just writing it in my journal. And then cosmicessence.com. That for some reason now doesn't look good in my browser, but it used to. So I don't know what happened there. That must be a change in Firefox because I didn't change anything in that site, but it used to look really pretty and now it looks very strange.
Right? Yeah, I've noticed that some of these themes, they've changed the font. I see it on Chrome. Particularly the ones like Times, they get really they're horrible. They don't look at all pleasant to read.
No, they don't. But they must have changed something about how the code is being read, because I have not changed anything in my code, but that website has been there for a very long time. And now there's chunks of writing that don't come out in the right color. They look weird, do you know what I mean? And it's literally as if some code has broken, but my code has not changed. So it must be the browser that is not reading it right. I'm not quite sure exactly what's going on there. At some point in time, I will gather all my websites under one roof in some way.
Under katiegalanti.com.
Maybe, yay. Maybe that will be the time.
Wouldn't that be a nice approach?
Ruby, make it easier. Also, I'm on Facebook, and actually at the moment I have room for friends on Facebook. I didn't before, but now I do.
some people got upset, so you got some new friends.
I lost about 100 people this summer, so I must have been too grumpy or too fluffy or one or the other. It doesn't matter. Anyway, they're gone.
Or maybe too truthful for them.
Oh, I don't know. Actually, I don't think I'm doing anything that rocks the boat in any way on Facebook, so I think maybe I was too boring, but but I do have a space on Facebook at the moment, so if you want to go to my Facebook, you can go there. And I just switched on Twitter, right? I don't really get Twitter because nobody talks back to you. I don't know. It's not really my thing.
Yeah, I've got a Twitter account, and I'm thinking, I suppose what it's like is like, you know, all these, like, we used to have MySpace and then we got Skype and you got the status, you know, like, this is what I'm feeling or thinking or the music that I'm listening to. But I can never think of, I'm sure, I always come out with little things, little aphorisms, but I can never bother, I can't be bothered to tweet them, you know.
Yeah, but also nobody answers you back, so what's the point?
Maybe do people like? I don't know. I don't tweet much. Anyway, so Katie's on tweet as @KatieGalanti.
Yes, I am.
Can you spell that very carefully for everybody?
What, my name?
Yeah.
Okay, KatieGalanti.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Twitter thing is there. And that's it, really. And I think I'm done. My head is starting to explode, so I think I better go.
Well, Katie, thank you. It's been a marathon. It's been quite a download. That we've had loads of information. Really, what's the word? Pertinent and apposite. Yeah. Information for the coming time in the next month or so. We'll see you all in a month's time. Maybe I'll play some music in a while, maybe just leave it a very short show, or maybe I'll come back and blur about something, but I'll say goodbye to Katie while you listen to It's Autumn Now, and maybe for Justin, it's going to be forever autumn. So, so thank you very much, Katie Galanti, for coming with us on Ever Beyond the Box tonight, and we'll be back after this. So, welcome back to Ever Beyond. That was Forever Autumn by Justin Hayward from the War of the Worlds album. Just to clear up all of that conversation. What a show that's been. So, I'm back on my own now. If anybody would like to send some questions in, or indeed call in, you can come in on. I've got half an hour left on the show before Frank Jordan comes along. We are on wolfspirit.switchboard. We are on 775-657-5973. You know my Skype. Most people in listening in the chat room know my Skype, so you can call in. So. But maybe, I was just making tea before, and the track ran out. I thought I had plenty of time, but I didn't. Yeah, I know, I'm back. I can see it now. Lovely. Bless your heart. Two sugars and a dash of milk. Actually, I have no sugar. Sometimes I have honey when I need to lubricate my voice, so to speak. Anyway. Ah, yes. The comet. Ison. If it is a comet. Doesn't look like a comet to me. I have to say, you know, I spoke with Tolek, I've spoken with Gordon Gianinotto for hours and hours. Many people have been saying that there's something in the that is approaching. I've felt this sense of growing excitement, I have to say, amidst all of the doom and gloom that seems to be happening, that, you know, it looks like the Third World War is about to start. Well, it's been feeling like that for a little while now. You know, it feels like, oh, it's just about to start, and it seems to be averted. And they're trying to start it again, and it gets averted. And so, I'm not on that roundabout anymore. I've jumped right off that roundabout. I can't be arsed with it, to be honest. And I just go about every day just doing what needs to be done. You know, somebody calls me up, I speak to them on the phone. If somebody comes to my house, I speak to them. And, you know, so that's the way it is. That's the way it is for me. And I'm trying not to be involved in the world's affairs because they seem actually to be manipulated. Let's not say that. I don't watch that thing that we believe is the truth. We've been programmed to believe that the news is truth, and that sci-fi is fiction, and that historical drama is how things really used to be. But from what we're seeing, historical drama is a very, very slanted view of the world, and it is over dramatized, and it's certainly nothing to do with the reality that people lived in. And then the news seems to be fake, And science fiction films, they seem to be telling the most truth of all. So who's to know? Yeah. The other thing is I find a lot of science fiction very emotional, and I cry at Star Trek. I mean, let's talk about this film. The other day I went to see a film with my girlfriend, Wolf Baby, there in the chat room, and I can't stop talking about this film because it's one of the most unusual films that I've seen. It's called About Time, and it's from the stable of Four Weddings and a Funeral and Notting Hill. And so it's that kind of quality so you understand the feel of it. But it had no CGI, yet it purported to be a film about time travel. There was no CGI, there's no big blang flash, that big kind of sound that you get in every movie, you know, where they close a door. There wasn't a car chase. There wasn't a fist fight. There wasn't firearms. There wasn't a shootout. There wasn't the car chase. There wasn't the corridor running. It was nothing like that. It was people living their lives and doing this unusual thing, which was like he would do what it was. He kind of made his own Groundhog Day. There's somebody calling in. Let's bring him in. Hi, Rick. Let me finish this thought, and I'll be right with you.
Cool.
So there was this kind of very very normal. It felt, but it was the drama of their real feeling lives. It was very normal kind of activities that they did, but they saw the magic in them. But the main thing that really sold me this film was the relationship between the father and the son was not dysfunctional. He wasn't an alcoholic. He was a nice guy. And they played table tennis and he made up stories and they went for tea on the beach. And it was just so beautiful and so regular, so normal. And yet there was the magic that they could extract from that normality that actually, you know, you can actually make a film where the father and the son, they love each other and get on well, you know, and they have this thing. And it just worked for me. It was a really nice film. So I would totally, totally recommend About Time. All right. So are you Rick from the chat room? Rick?
Yeah, hi, how are you? This is Rick and Annie from Shake and Wait to the Truth with Divide and Conquer This, and I just wanted to tell you it was a great show today.
Oh, I enjoyed myself. And,
there's two of you. Amazing. Yeah. There's two of you. You're yeah. like Zaphod Beeblebrox with two heads talking.
Yeah.
You finish each other's statements.
Yeah, I'm the brain to the operation.
Oh, I see. And he's the stomach.
Snack. Did I say that out loud?
Shut.
And Rick is the stomach, then.
Yeah, we're new to Revolution Radio. I just wanted to comment.
Not Revolution.
I mean, we were on Revolution Radio doing a morning show for a while, Shake and Wake, and we're on Revolution Radio. I mean, excuse me, Wolf Spirit Radio. We're running with the pack now.
Yeah, remember.
And we do several days a week at all different hours of the day, so you can catch us day or night. Our bumper is like kind of like a funny little thing.
So anyway.
You know. But anyways, what I wanted to mention to you is I believe in the spiritual. We're well aware that the religious dynamic that's been put forward has totally been co-opted for the longest time. So, and I think just like the Illuminati and the occult doesn't want you to talk about religion or politics, they also don't want you to delve into the significance of the planets and stars, or that, you know, that they use magic, that spirit beings or demonic beings are real, because they want to keep that all hidden. They don't want you to look into that. So, you know, you've got the Catholic Church putting out that, you shouldn't look into astrology or the spirit world, because they use that, you know, it's demonic, and they use the demonic side of the unseen things that are hidden from us. So they don't really want us to look into that or educate ourselves about that stuff. Wouldn't you agree? Are you there?
Oh, terribly sorry. Sorry, yeah, I had me mic muted.
I do that sometimes too. I'll mute up to listen. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they don't want you to know that prayer is a form of magic, and that we can all pray for somebody and help healing, or that, you know, they don't want us to look into these things, so they deem it as being unspiritual and bad. You know, don't talk about religion or politics or astrology or magic, or the spirit world doesn't exist, you know.
Well, we can see that, like I was saying before, you know, we have been lied to more than before we were born. Long, 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 long before we were born. That the whole thing was set up, and, you know, we just get poured again into the same old boxes, same old boxes, same old boxes. And we're told this box is green when it's blue, you know. And it's like one of, what is it in, two and two make five, isn't it? Is in
right.
In 1984, yeah. He's saying, what's two and two? You know, it's like five. Yeah. And we've been told that two and two make five ever since we were born. And we accept it because in the world that we've been put, two and two do make five. They've set it up that way. Except that it's a lie, and they've been stretching time and space to make it happen, and that's the Matrix and Groundhog
exactly.
Day and all that stuff.
Right, and they use magic.
They use magic all the bloody time
for evil forces and stuff. So they will deny the existence of fallen angels or a leader that would be the adversary, Satan, and, you know, they say that's his greatest trick.
That he doesn't
possession
exist.
Isn't real. You got the psychology people out there that were created by the Rockefellers to tell you that, no, that's a brain disorder. Possession isn't real. Come on.
Exactly. Exactly. And basically, that the fourth dimensional world that they come from doesn't exist is something that isn't real. And they can find all sorts of ways of making sure that it's not real, because it doesn't produce certain physical effects that just happen not to be tuned into that thing. But there are other technologies that do measure those physical effects and can be seen. And, you know, we can see photons these days. And we see photons doing all sorts of amazing things these days. When people remote view,
amazing.
They can pick up photons from the viewed site. So
when you're
Their magic, yeah, their magic really works, and our magic can work as well, and we have to remember that we can do that magic, and that we can sustain it, because they know how to sustain it, and we don't know how to, we just try, it doesn't work, you know, I'll give it up, you know, but they know that if you work at it, it really does work.
When the blinders come off, when before you were awake, when you watched TV, you didn't see the symbolism and what was being done. But once you wake up, you can turn on the TV or the movie, and Annie and I will be like, hey, did you see that pyramid in the background? Did you see that all-seeing eye on the guy's T-shirt? Did you see that Masonic symbol in the picture behind the guy? It's like putting on the glasses in that movie They Live.
Yeah.
All this stuff, you know, you can see it when you're awake. But when you're not awake, you don't even notice it.
It's interesting, yeah. So, what's your take on the thing that we were talking about before, about the idea that Roddenberry and Heinlein and Asimov were all kind of insiders or connected with the insiders and had access? Do you have any stories about that?
Yeah, well, actually, we watched a movie that you can look for, Hollywood's Satanic Influence. We watched this just a couple days ago, and Roddenberry claimed he was one of the he's a Luciferian, and that the ideas, he didn't write them, they just came to him. So So whether or not they're showing you something, and I mean, look at, when you look at the old Star Trek and flip phones and stuff, you know, or Kubrick, we were talking in the chat room about Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, hell yeah.
There seems to be a whole lot of, you know, they're showing you, they're telling you. They show you all this stuff, or even movies, you know, like a horror movie where, you know, some couple is going through a small town and breaks down, and while they're at the garage, it's going to take a few days to get your car fixed, but well, there's a hotel up the street, and then the phone call goes out to all the other Satanists, hey, we got a live one here. I mean, they want you to think that what you see in movies is fantasy and science fiction, so that when somebody realizes the truth about this Satanism and that it exists and it's all widespread all over the country and the world, and somebody starts talking about it, the response will be, well, you watch too much X-Files, or you watch too many movies, or, you know, there's an agenda of fallen angels or demonic beings, and they're going to claim that they're God, and people are going to fall for it. You know, okay, well, they also show you, like, that the aliens are our friends, too. I mean, so they're constantly barraging the people with acclamation one way or the other, or to discredit it, or to make you think that you just got a wild imagination, and that's just fantasy and fiction. But it's not.
They're playing a double game, you see. They're playing the confusion game. They give you both pieces of information. Each one seems to be equally valid. Oh, no, I don't know whether I should feel that way. Should I go that way, or I should go this way? Oh, should I go this way, or should I go that way? That way, this way, this way, that way. And you never get to that point of, right, okay, that's the way, because my heart feels this. This is what I feel. Or I don't want to go either of your ways, because you prescribe both of them. That they both lead to the slaughterhouse. I'm going my way. Right. And that's the evolution.
Well, what they were saying in the movie that I'm talking about, the documentary, was basically that all movies and all television was designed to hypnotize them in its propaganda. All of it. It was never designed simply to entertain. And if you do see a good movie now and then, like The Green Mile is one of my favorite movies. So now and then, yes, they will put out something of substance with a little bit of good and bad in a morality tale. Just like Alex Jones will tell you a lot of truths, so you'll believe this info has to give you a certain amount of good stuff and the truth, so they can deceive you. Because if all they gave you was lies that is unsubstantiated, or just, put it this way, if all media was just blood and gore, we would realize that, oh, TV and movies are bad. So, you know, they try to give you a little bit of decent stuff now and then, and even in that decent stuff, there's a lot of
acclamation.
Yeah. You know, like Christian music. A lot of people think, oh, well, you know, rock and roll has evil in it, but not Christian music. Bull, you know, it's like certain levels of booze, some wine. You've got wine, you've got a little bit stronger booze, and then you've got grain alcohol of vodka and whiskey. You know, where I would say death metal or Kiss would be whiskey. Well, then some of your milder, more middle-of-the-road soft rock would be like wine. Either way, it's going to get you drunk. And that's what they want. You know, they want to suck you in, you know?
So, what do we do about it and have a good time as well?
Well, I think once you realize what was being done, like, I still listen to some classic rock, and you know, I don't like Led Zeppelin like I once did, because of obviously Jimmy Page and the Crowley worship, and if you play Stairway to Heaven backwards, we'll give you 666, and all of that stuff. I realized seeing pictures of Kid Rock giving the satanic sign, hanging out with Bill Clinton or something. He's obviously demonic as well as, you know. But, you know, like I said, once you know how the trick is done, then it can't really affect you. You know, a lot of people say, well, I don't have a TV. I threw it out. Well, we did too. But then when we moved and rented this little house that we live in on the river in Florida, not too far from Daytona and St. Augustine, you know, we got chickens and we're doing a garden and we've got the river in the back to fish. So we're getting ready for the end.
But the TV
and cable and internet was all part of the rental. So, you know, I will turn the TV on and watch certain things, you know, and I see it for what it is, you know. And really, when a false flag happens, that TV goes on, and I'm flipping back and forth from Fox to CNN and NBC, and I will go over and hear what Alex Jones has to say also, besides listening to Freedom Networks and hearing the truth. Because it's important to know, Bill Cooper said, if you don't know your enemy, you have no business being on the battlefield. So, I want to know what the enemy is trying to brainwash the sheeple to believe when something happens. So, I would say to everybody out there, it's okay if you watch TV or certain movies. Just, you know, watch it with realizing what they're trying to do.
Use your discernment.
Use your discernment, right. Like all we were talking on our show this week, all the zombie stuff that's out there, man. Half the movies and TV shows and stuff out there, zombies, and people shooting zombies. Well, that's because, you know, when they use a biological weapon or they shut down the grid or EMP and all these people on psychotropic meds or people infected with a biological agent or something are sick and wandering around with zombified minds because they can't take their medication anymore. They want you not to see them as human beings. You know, they want, you know, and people watch that stuff and think, oh yeah, you know, shoot the zombies. It's desensitization.
Yes, it's, and it's also about being able to separate yourself from another human being, who has, I mean, we do it all the time. You have the R word, the retard, right? You have the opposite of advanced, you know,
right.
They are seen as somehow subhuman. We have had this is a reptilian attitude. We've had this ever since the natural human was here on the planet, that we were we couldn't speak. The natural humans didn't speak; they didn't use vowels and words and all that. They had telepathy. It was much more efficient.
That's right. Oh, I totally agree with you.
And
because words are spells. Spelling.
Exactly.
Words are spells, and before, when we were like that, we were like animals. Like a dog can sense if someone has ill intent, so you couldn't be lied to. You
yes.
would know if somebody is in your camp and going to do harm to you. You know, you're a very wise man. You remind me of somebody we've had as a co-host and from who chats a lot at R&R. His name was Wingman. Have you ever heard him? Wingman. He's from the UK.
Oh,
but
no.
I'd love to have you.
Maybe
on
it's my alter ego
show. Yeah, no, I like what you have to say. I'd love to have you on our show sometime. You know, to ride and discuss this stuff with us. You know.
Oh, if you got fat to chew, yes. You know, I've been ruminating with the rest of the Wool Spirit staff for the last 3 years. You know, I helped to build the station with Dave, and.
Right.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Awesome.
And you know, we've had so many discussions and met so many very, very interesting people who have brought their little bit of the puzzle. And now it feels here, Autumn Equinox 2013, 22nd September, it feels like the picture is really, I mean, not just myself, but our whole audience, the whole group, we're all seeing the big picture, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, see? As one, I love it when you speak as one. That's great. I love it. It's like being in a cartoon.
No, because I've used that analogy. That when you're not completely awake or you're only seeing one side, it's like having a few pieces of the puzzle and it doesn't make sense. But what we all share is like bringing a different piece. And when you put all those pieces together, now you've got something that you can look at and go, wow, there it is. You know? So it's funny that you said that. I mean,
I say funny things.
We might. That sounded like John Lennon a little, the way he just said that.
Cool.
You know, a lot of people say and think he was a communist and sold out and was a Satanist. But, you know, I have to wonder. You know, he spoke against war and the military-industrial complex. And I've seen a lot of interviews. And in the end, him and George were sacrificed. So, you know, maybe they were pawns in the game at first, or they woke up and decided they don't want to go down this road.
Long story. I've spoken about this, actually, Rick, and that it's all about Paul, or Fall. He really, I mean, Lennon really did see the military-industrial complex right from the inside in from 1966.
Paul was the only one knighted.
Yeah, well, he was the only the only one who's loyal to the crown, MI5.
We did a whole show on this thing, and right. For those who don't believe that Paul really died and that was a whole conspiracy that really took place, there's a clip that we played and that, you know, I'd love to have you on for 2 hours and we can discuss this whole
thing. Oh, yeah, let's talk Fall one night, yeah. And we can talk Elvis as well. I've seen that too. And
I don't believe he died in 77.
And Bill Hicks.
Right.
Bill Hicks is Alex Jones.
Maybe he is. I've seen some. No, I mean, you know, I thought that was hooky and funny. And come on. But, you know, I mean, the stranger the story is, sometimes you really got to look at it.
You're going to give him your Skype address.
Yeah, he's got my Skype. You can Skype me requests, and we can talk about this off air and plan some days to. Maybe we can talk Elvis and.
That would be great.
Yeah. Well, let's do that. Listen, I have to go. We've got Frank Jordan. He'll be calling in a second. So it's been great speaking to you, Rick and Annie.
Can I just mention really quick?
Yeah, go on, really quick.
George, in a TV interview, while he was still alive, he's live on some TV show somewhere, I think it was in the UK, and he's talking about Fall, about Paul McCartney, Fall, and that's what he says. He says, well, personally, it's a personal issue with Fall. And if he would just come clean and clear up the history of the Beatles, then he would be set free and it would be Paul, Ringo, and I's responsibility. But personally, I don't have time to screw around anymore. And what he was basically saying, and he said Fall twice, he was basically saying that that's not who he said he was. And I mean...
Okay. You know, oh, totally agree.
The guy's going to call in. But we can talk off air and set up a show like that.
Very nice talking to you, JP.
Indeed. So we are going to zoom off. So thank you very much, Rick and Annie. And we'll join you after the break with Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tank Group.